Welcome to How I Wrote This, a show about writers, their books, and the story behind their stories. I'm your host, Pamela Hensley, and in season two, I traveled to Berlin. Learn what it's like growing up in a divided city, fleeing the country, living here as a Jewish expat. Join me as I speak to winners and contenders of the German Book Prize, the Thomas Mann Prize, the Dublin Literary Award, and the International Booker. Season two of How I Wrote This begins on April 23rd. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
That was a very playful issue of all our childhood, to memorize and to correct, to influence memories. And of course, we got aware of the very liquid shape of memory.
Welcome to How I Wrote This, a show about writers, their books, and the story behind their stories. I'm Pamela Hensley, and on the show today, Julia Frank talks with me about fleeing the East, the 9 months she spent in a refugee camp, and circling around trauma before she could write The Blind Side of the Heart, a novel that won her the German Book Prize. Julia was born in East Berlin in 1970. Raised by a single mother who worked as an actress, her upbringing was liberal and unsupervised. At the age of 14, she met her father, who died 3 years later. She talks of the suffering in her life, the early death of her first love, the suicide of her uncle, and how her next novels will be more fictional than the ones that came before. The Blind Side of the Heart is a story inspired by Julia's grandmother's abandonment of her father on a railway platform at the end of World War II. It's described as spellbinding by the German Book Prize jury and has been translated into 39 languages. Two more of her books are available in English, Back to Back, which draws on life in her grandmother's house as the wall in Berlin is being built, and West, which was also adapted for screen. I met with Julia at the studio in Berlin. Julia Frank, one Christmas when you were just about 8 years old, you received a diary that you soon began writing fictional entries in. Given how later you would write fiction that is so autobiographical, should that have been a signal of things to come?
Of course. And of course, you have to mention the place and situation where I received that gift of our mothers. That was when we lived in the refugee camp in West Berlin then, and we had just left the GDR to West Germany, and we still didn't know where we would settle one day, what our future could be like. And we were in school, we were discriminated, and we were called camp children, because we were living in the camp and everybody in school knew. So literature and writing from that moment on promised a whole possibility to get in contact with the world and not feeling isolated any longer.
But you weren't tempted to write just what was happening at the time?
I tried to. My mother told us, my twin and me, she told us what a diary is about. Maybe she thought of Anne Frank's diary or anything like that. And we all felt like in prison a bit, because it wasn't that easy to leave the refugee camp. But after the first trials, I started to invent and to write fiction, because all the things we experienced day by day seemed to be too boring and too stupid for me.
Maybe we should go back and explain a bit more. You were born in a country that no longer exists. What were the early days like?
Actually, I think everybody's life in GDR or other countries is very individual. On one hand, And on the other, like my family had been an artist's family, and my grandmother, my Jewish grandmother, who was socialist and then sort of communist, it was her decision to get back to Germany, to Berlin, and not to the West where she was born and raised, but to settle and move to the East. My grandmother was a very emotional artist and thinker, but she ignored the restrictions her children and all the other people around would suffer. And that was a sort of problem, because when we were little, my grandmother taught us how to show civil courage, civil courage. That was her magic word. And she always wanted us to speak liberally, free, and with empathy with all the people who belong to other social classes. The social class issue was a big thing for her, because she had grown up in Weimar Republic and in a very academical bourgeois family, Jewish family. But she thought the socialism would be a healing for all Germans. And for a longer time, she ignored all the restrictions in GDR. Maybe until her son, her only son, committed suicide with 18 years, a few months after the wall was built. And that was the first moment when she realized that the GDR is not the better Germany.
You've talked about the independence or freedom that you had as a child in that household. At the time, how did you view it?
I was always a little bit suspicious. So was my twin. We both were suspicious. We sometimes had the feeling they would play roles, and that they wouldn't be the only and very authentic person always, but they would change as soon as friends were there, or as soon as a very close, intimate fellow would be there, or as soon as the audience changes. Also, the way of speaking, the way of behavior changed. I remember a very early dream in my childhood I had, when I dreamt I would be a Rothschild, that my family, my grandmother, my mother, my elder sister, they would be robberies, and they just catched me and adopted me. In reality, in my dreamlike reality, I wouldn't be a real child, a biological child of them. And I think that very early dream I had, like, I know it because I did talk a lot with my sister, my twin sister. Both of us were in a talking and playing relationship for all our childhood. So we built a sort of collective memory together. Also, if we were in different opinion to certain circumstances of experiences and perspectives, of course, but we always memorized certain experiences we had. So that was a very playful issue of all our childhood, to memorize, to correct, to influence memories. And of course, we got aware of the very liquid shape of memory. Memory isn't something you can conservate in a box.
It's changing all the time.
It's changing,
isn't it? Yeah.
All your lifetime. And it changes, of course, and it's different among people who belong to the same family. Like I wrote in the preface of my latest book, everybody of us had another grandmother, because everybody's narration and everybody's memory is different.
Was it confusing if you suspected that your mother changed how she acted depending on the audience?
Of course. And it let, I'm so sorry and in the same time thankful for her being my mother, but it also did something in my trust. I didn't really trust her because I always know how differently she would act in other circumstances and situations.
As the daughter of an actress, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And she was a brilliant, a wonderful storyteller. Mm. Her skills to invent stories and to enlengthen fairy tales and invented stories were just amazing.
You wouldn't perhaps have been trying to show her that you could do that in your diary, would you have?
Oh, no, no. Interesting question. No, I never felt in a competition with my mother, or I never had the wish to imitate her. Mm-hmm. Interesting question, though. I admired her when I was little, and I found her to be the most beautiful and most loving mother ever, which changed in my adolescence mm-hmm. a lot. But when I was little, I really loved and admired that charismatic woman. Mm. But I didn't trust her like other children trust their mothers.
That blind trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. So eventually you did leave the camp and you ended up in a farmhouse, and that was your home. But you left it very early at an age of something like 13, and you went to live with a friend of the family.
Yeah, I stayed with a couple, Steffi and Martin, who then also fled GDR in 76, already a few years before, and they lived in West Berlin then. We had a lot discussions on that, on my need to leave her and her house. And she had a lot understanding and empathy because she knew how many and very aggressive fights her daughters and she had. She knew about her dysfunctional behavior as a mother. And that is, to be honest, she suffered depressions, of course, after all she made through, and it wasn't only the time, her younger or professional times in GDR and the flat of to West Berlin, but also her youth was very, very dramatic, including the suicide of her beloved, very close brother when she was 19, he mm-hmm. was 18. So my mother is a very complex and very charismatic, but very dysfunctional person.
So you left and you went to the family friend's house, and they gave you your own room. And you said, that's what I needed, a room of my own. And is this when you began writing in earnest?
Yeah, I already anticipated Virginia Woolf's sentences. I hadn't read that time at all. But I didn't think of myself as becoming a writer, not that clearly at this time, no, not at all. But when I moved in at my friend's house, and Steffi, who was in her beginning 30s then, she recommended a lot literature to me, like all the French existential nihilistic writers and the Russian writers like Dostoevsky and Gorky, but also like Sartre, Camus, Bataille, mm. And some of the German writers like Kafka. And so I think she was the person in my whole life until she died a few years ago. She was the person who influenced me mostly becoming a reader and writer. Mm. And I couldn't make a separation between both. I think I became a writer because I was a very passionate reader when I was a child, when I was a young adult when I was a young woman. Mm-hmm. And I didn't read for a few years when I had children because I didn't have the time then. Yeah. Because writing, traveling on translations of my writings and being a mother who wanted to be at home, mm-hmm. as most as possible, didn't leave so much time to read. But I read the last years again, and I really find it essential to know about, to learn about worlds, to learn about people, to learn about fortunes, perspectives on world, perspective on lives.
Mm-hmm. You went on to study literature. You traveled, you became a journalist. And then in 1997, you began to publish novels. Your first two are somewhat mysterious. Were you playing with style, or did it take you time to find your voice?
No, I circled around my fear to write about those very painful experiences in my family and my own life. Experiences of loss, of discrimination, of course, in former generation, of German Jewish discrimination and murder, of course. And so there were so many painful experiences in my family and my own life, including the very early death of my biological father, whom I met only when I came to West Berlin. When I was 14, he suffered brain cancer, a tumor, when he was 49, and I was 17 then when he deceased. And my very first love, my big first romantic love, Stefan, died when I was 22. In a bicycle accident with a truck. So that were my most inner and hidden dramatic traumas, which I circled around when I wrote and was to publish my very first novels. So that they were very much fiction at its farthest extent, maybe. Not to come close to my own experiences. And then after the first three novels, books, they also include a collection of short stories, I decided for getting closer.
Oh, and that's brave.
Yeah, I had become mother in between. Maybe becoming a parent affords another strength, yeah.
Your third book, Lagerfeuer, was adapted to the screen as West and described in The Guardian as an intriguing counterpoint to the Oscar-winning film, The Lives of Others. Is there a message for the West in that book?
Yeah, I think there is a message. And a message that was a long time before we today in Europe deal with migration from far more south. We had the migration from east to west. And at least in my experience, I realized when I was a child that the West people had a lot of prejudices against the East, and they didn't really want to get too close with people from the East. So I decided to write a book where one of the protagonists, maybe the main protagonist, is the West Berlin refugee camp itself, plus four different voices of inhabitants, or three inhabitants and one officer for the CIA who did the interviews with the refugees. And I thought it is very interesting for Western people to remember that we or they, and now it changes, where is we and where mm-hmm. is here, where is there, you know, yeah. That changed in my childhood and adolescent times. Always, I didn't have a fixed point of view from here, neither from east nor from west, but I clearly remember the prejudices, the restrictions, the discriminations people in West had and followed against people from East Europe. Mm-hmm.
We'll be back after this.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Let's talk about your next book, Die Mittags Frau, which was translated into English as The Blind Side of the Heart, and the one that brought you international fame. It tells the story of a woman who abandons her young son, Peter, at a railway station in the days just after the Second World War. The novel opens with a prologue in Peter's voice, then switches to his mother's voice. And before we delve into the content of the book, can I ask you if it was always structured that way?
Yes. You will.
I'm fascinated by structure.
Yes, so am I. I love architecture and structures, and I'm very much interested in perspectives. So when I started to write Die Mittagsfrau, indeed, I started to write from the very first page and wrote the whole novel until the last page, with knowing after the first 20 pages, which were the prologue then, knowing this perspective of the young boy will be accompanied by the perspective of Helena's. So you have a personal auctorial perspective. Do you have that word?
Authorial? The well, author's perspective?
I'm telling of the boy and I'm writing about Peter and Helena in third form, he and she.
Yes.
But in the prologue and the epilogue, we only know and experience, see and realize and learn what Peter sees and is aware of.
Yes.
So it's a very strong child's perspective mm-hmm. on his mother, on the day and the circumstances of their leaving Stettin at that time in mm-hmm. 1945. And later in the whole and huge center of the novel, you learn and know only things Helena is experiencing. Helena alias Elise.
That Peter never knows.
That Peter never knows mm-hmm. that she had another name before she became mother. So, and that secrets or hidden details, hidden truth between both of them, between mother and child, is one of the reasons why she might come to the conclusion to leave Peter, to abandon her child.
Well, what we feel for Peter is felt even more acutely when we learned that this is actually a true story based on your own father. Mm-hmm. He was abandoned by his mother on a railway station in the days after the war. Did your father, when you got to know him, did he ever talk about that day?
No, he refused to talk about it. Refused all my questions about his mother. I really wanted to know more about her because our mother always told us, oh, you know, I'm a very difficult person, but your father is as well because of that very traumatic experience being an abandoned child. And so when I met my father, I was 14, I was very shy, so was he. And both of us took a long time to get in talks and to, but we liked each other. And I tried to find out what happened. What kind of person might your mother have been? And he never wanted to talk about her. He refused to talk about his mother. He refused to know even whether she would be alive or not. He doesn't know. When he was on his deathbed, he didn't know whether his mother would be alive or not. He hadn't had any contact with her.
He simply never forgave her.
No, he couldn't forgive her. He didn't want to see and to re-meet her. He couldn't forgive her.
See, the thing that I found so fascinating about the book and the structure of the book is that in that opening, it's hard for a reader to forgive her. And then you go into the main book, and some critics have gone so far as to say maybe you show her too much empathy. Because you tell this story and there's so much suffering in it, deprivation, abuse, there is rapes when she's older. And of course, she survives the Second World War as a Jewish woman. And so I'm wondering, what is your response to people who feel that way?
Maybe two things. Maybe, you know, in all times of wars where genocides or maybe even only domestic violence influences individual lives, especially in war times where most families, like the individuals, are damaged and some destroyed, the nucleus of society, of the social boundings are destroyed, and you have orphans and women's houses full after on during war times in all regions of the world. And orphans not only because their parents, both father and mother, would be dead, but also because if they're not physically dead, they are suffering traumas and they cannot cope the parent-child relationship anymore. So, and I also got similar reactions to my novel when I traveled to Croatia, where the war was only a few years ago. And they told me, oh, we have a similar problem here. Oh, we have huge damages and destructions in the very private nucleuses of our society. Mm-hmm. So you cannot judge on a father or a mother who is abandoning their child. And there is not a biological, you know, bounding as soon as a child is born. You know, I even have an understanding and empathy for teenage mothers who give their child away because they know they cannot afford what a stable family could mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. I think the more you involve and the more you do research on human condition, the more understanding and empathy you develop. And then there is another aspect of the whole discussion about mothers years after Blindside of the Heart was released, the whole regretting motherhood movement popped up. And I think we always talk about mothers and we forget about fathers. But why we don't talk about fathers? Maybe if we would find out, oh, sometimes it's lonely or single mothers or mothers who try to be independently in under circumstances and conditions where the environment would expect them to be a housewife and mother only. And Helena's century was a century of huge chances for women. She had the hope for maybe studying one day.
To be a doctor.
To be a doctor.
Yeah.
To study. And in the year when she was born in 1907, most German countries didn't have the right for women to enter university. Mm. And even after the right was established, you needed a father or a husband to support and agree. So it was a completely different world then. And I was interested how a woman made her independent life in that century. I didn't know my paternal mother. I didn't know whether she was Jewish or not. I only had my maternal grandmother who was Jewish. And I know about all the restrictions and all the expectations she suffered in her lifetime. She died in 2009, so she became very old, and I knew her a long lifetime. And I wanted to tell a story about a woman living in a century that wouldn't offer so many opportunities we have today still. Maybe not any longer. You never know. I mean, as soon as democracies will fail, we women, we will the first to fail with democracy.
Yeah, and progress is not ensured.
No, not at all.
Talking about the 1900s when Helena lived, I'm curious about your thoughts on the historical novel. Does time help a reader to develop a more nuanced perspective of a character?
Yes, certainly. Which includes that also novels that will be written in about 100 years can tell another truth and narrative of our times today than we can today. But there is no concurrence or competition in truth, you know. There is a core of truth and of perspectives on certain times. And I think that for me, it was a lot easier to write about women in the 20th century than it would have been for my mother or my grandmother, because they were too close. And for example, my grandmother had a lot of difficulties, like my father as well, and my mother. But my grandmother had a lot of difficulties to talk about her most painful experiences.
Of course, yeah.
She would prefer to be silent on that.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, and when you realize and understand and get to know and learn while getting in touch and in conversation with people from another generation, then you understand a little better. And I think my grandmother also, she was very astonished about the openness, the frank reports people in my generation would give and would do about their own personal lives, for example. Mm-hmm. In her generation, nobody would do that. Nobody would give a report on their own life and their own personal intimate sexual or health or being a parent, a soldier, a teacher experience. In her generation and her view, that seemed very self-centered and narcissistic.
Privacy, or what privacy means, has changed a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
The Blind Side of the Heart won the German Book Award in 2007 and has been translated into, I think, about 39 languages. Did it change your approach to writing in any way?
No, maybe there is a change because the aging of myself. And because today I also realized how my own perspective on certain things or situations and questions would change during my lifetime. But there is no reaction and change because of the success or because of the resonance, the reflection of other languages and cultures. But of course, what I really appreciated was that I had the opportunity to travel a lot in the decade after the German Book Prize, and when all the translations made me travel to the States, to Israel, to Vietnam, to Argentina, to
everywhere.
Everywhere.
In terms of craft, did it change?
That also changes. From book to book, mm-hmm. book by book, is written differently. My early novels were written very chronological. Mm-hmm. Maybe the last book, Welten Auseinander, is the first book I more wrote like a mosaic or a kaleidoscope. So I had certain scenes and chapters, and then I did a whole rewriting process after I had written the first issue.
I like that mosaic kaleidoscope style, because you think in layers and you remember in layers.
Right, yeah. And you remember along motives more than chronologically. Certain topics lead you through the whole book. And as a writer, as well as the reader, you can follow it, and you wouldn't be lost even if I switch forward and backwards chronologically.
The novel you wrote after The Blind Side of the Heart was called Back to Back, and it takes place in the former GDR, just after the wall goes up. Like Blind Side of the Heart, it's ostensibly about individual lives, but there's this allegorical feel to it. Do you think about the parallels between the smaller stories and the larger stories when you're writing?
Of course. Like in my family or families mingle different layers of our society, of our political history, of our backgrounds. And as you always have a narrative and very individual perspective in literature, you can think as a reader, you can extend the individual story to a brighter and metaphorical or historical story. So I think both the microcosmos and the macrocosmos are always interlinked.
How literal should we be? Should we look at Katie, who is the mother and is fairly cold and not very maternal? Should she be read as an oppressive state and the twins like East and West? Or is this going too far?
I would leave it up to the reader to interpret and to analyze.
Well, there's a lot of opportunity to imagine what they might represent.
Which is the wonderful thing of literature, that you always have the immersion, the complete immersion between writer and reader. Yeah. There is no book without a reader. And there are so many books, like the readers, like when you have five different readers and you ask them, what is the story about and what would it mean? You will receive five different answers.
Yeah, of course. In Back to Back, it's sort of in the background, the way the wall is going up in the middle of Berlin. And yet it's not a focus for any of the characters. They either don't seem all that concerned about it, or they can't do anything about it, so they don't pay it much attention. Would you say that was a common response?
Oh, no. I wouldn't even agree, because Thomas, so we have the siblings, Ella and Thomas is afraid and suffering because he knows that the wall is built like the son of my grandmother. He's 18 when this wall is closed. Mm-hmm. And he is writing to friends and relatives in the West, please get me out of here. Please help me, answer me. So he is committing suicide. And you know what my grandmother's best friend from France, Jewish Berliner, who fled to France during the Nationalsozialism, he held the speech for the death of my uncle. And he said the one sentence, he died of our ideologies. And he said that in 1962. Back to back is very, very close to the real story and the facts in my family and the country around at this time. So it influenced the people, and yeah, it involved them. They were living in that state, in that, inside that closing wall and country, you know.
Thomas is a tragic character. He's got his mother to deal with. He wanted to be a writer or a journalist and was not allowed to. And of course, he falls in love with a doomed woman, essentially. I wondered if you felt he was a doomed character from the start.
Well, yeah, I think he is just not strong enough to cope. And he developed after he realized that nobody from the West could and would help him, would reach out for him to get out of the country. He felt so caught, so inside, caught in the border, caught inside the system, that he had a certain equal disgust.
Yes, disgust for
society. For society.
As you mentioned, the story is very close to your mother's side of the family. Were you at all concerned with writing the character of Katie, which is not very flattering, about publishing that and the consequences of it being public?
I wrote it after my grandmother died. I started in 2009, and I decided to wait until her death, because the last 3 or 4 years she was dement, and she wouldn't be infected by the whole publishing process at all. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want her to be alive when I published this book. I know how strong she had hidden the suffering of her losses all her life. Only with her closest friends she spoke about the death of her first man husband. She wasn't allowed to marry because of Nationalsozialism, didn't allow Jews to marry non-Jews. I knew that my grandmother wouldn't like anybody to talk about certain things and experiences in her family, her life. But my mother, again, is another generation. She told us very early on about her own childhood, including abuses, sexual as well as mental, psychological abuses. From very early on, she told us a lot about the very close existential relationship to her brother. And she also told us very frankly about being abused by her stepfather, being abused by a spy, an officer of a secret service, who was lodger in the house of her mother's. Mm-hmm. And she had been abused later two or three times. So since my mother told us about her experiences with those men, plus the very idolized brother who hadn't been a sexual human being at all in her narratives, mm-hmm. but he was in the same time, he had a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. But in her narrative, he was opposite. He was very differently than all the other men in her life. So I had the stories and the storytelling of my mother's also about her past. So I knew I would show my novel to my mother before it will be printed.
Right.
And so I did. I knew she was more than 70 years old then. I knew before because I had talked with her during the process of writing as well. I knew that she wouldn't...
She didn't object to it.
No. She was a little afraid to read mm-hmm. because she knows the process of arts and literature always changes a bit.
Yes.
But after she read my manuscript, she called me and told me she wanted to thank me.
Why did she want to thank you?
Because maybe like in a psychological process where you ask the child to paint the ghosts of their dreams, I did what she could not.
Yeah.
I just found words and pictures, scenes for her life. And I found a narrative for an adolescent life where she only could tell us as we were her children, but where she never ever could make a story about or a novel about. Never.
It's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a gift for her.
It was, in a certain form, it was a gift for her, yeah.
Your last novel, your most recent one, is called Worlds Apart in English. And this time it tells a story very close to your own life. A young woman grows up in the East, moves West, leaves home at 13. I get it, write what you know, but I wonder if you're ever tempted to write what you don't know. Or if you ever worry about running out of family stories.
Actually, there are so many, so many stories still hidden, explicitly hidden, and willingly hidden.
You've only scratched the surface.
That I only scratched the surface and got deeper into some of the wings. But for instance, I would never write about things and experiences in my family or friend circle that would hurt somebody in one way or the other. And so this means that I think my autobiographical work has come to a natural ending for the moment. Maybe in about 30 years I could do more on that, but the next novels have to be a lot more fictional than the last three.
Are you writing the next novel yet?
Yes.
Can you tell us anything about it?
Oh, no. I would never, ever talk about a book I've not finished yet.
Then we have to wait for it.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, the conversation has to come to an end. But may I ask you if you can recommend any German writers for English-speaking readers?
Oh, definitely. So one who luckily is translated a lot after she was awarded the Nobel Prize is Hertha Müller, who is a German writer, even though she is not born in Germany, but she writes German and she is a brilliant writer. I also love writers like Judith Herrmann or Katja Oskam. I really love to recommend a very young writer, Dana Vohwinkel, who just released her first novel, Gewässer in Ziploc, and is, will be translated in English next year in the States.
Do you know the English title?
It is a very strange title in Germany because you cannot make sense of it. Gewässer in Ziploc. What is that supposed to mean? But after you read the novel, it makes sense. So I wonder whether they will be brave enough to choose and to go for that very strange title.
Mm-hmm.
It's like waters in Ziploc. Or maybe they would go for liquids in Ziploc.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense, but it's a brilliant story that a novel of a 15-year-old Margarita and a 39-year-old father who is Chazan in a synagogue here in Berlin. And it's a novel that takes place today and takes place in Berlin, Chicago, and Israel. So it's a novel that has triangles on very different layers.
Julia Frank, thank you very much for the conversation.
Thank you very much.
That was Julia Frank. How I Wrote This is produced and hosted by me, Pamela Hensley, and presented by Knockabout Media. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please tell a friend, follow us on your favorite podcast app, and consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It truly helps other listeners discover the show. Next week, join me as I speak with Ivana Saiko.
I am a very obsessive person, so I go through every chapter, I will not exaggerate, at least 200 times.
Knockabout Media Original.
Hold on.